So, if you look around and you feel like the world is just collapsing under the weight of its own complexity, I mean, the polarization, the institutional distrust, that deep ecological strain, it can feel overwhelming.
It is. And if you feel that, you're not wrong. But our deep dive today suggests we might be looking at the wrong problem.
How so?
Well, the source we're digging into, From Survival to Coherence by Dr. Bacharach Aile, with some help from GPT-5, it completely reframes these global stresses.
Okay.
They're not problems of just lacking information. I mean, we are drowning in information.
Right.
They're problems of capacity, our collective capacity to feel safe, to collaborate, to even perceive reality without, dissolving into conflict. That's
No.
the real bottleneck.
And this synthesis he builds is, it's incredibly ambitious. It pulls from neurobiology, adult development, systems theory.
It really is.
So our mission today is to give you the blueprint. We want to extract that central idea that maturity isn't just a private, personal goal. It's the actual foundation of our collective stability, maybe even our survival.
And the thesis that makes all this possible is it's deceptively simple.
What is it?
Adulthood is not the finish line.
We don't just stop growing.
Exactly. The very structure of how we make meaning, how you interpret a perceived threat, how you process an emotion, how you relate to someone who completely disagrees with you, that structure continues to evolve. And that evolution is what determines if we can handle the 21st century.
Okay, let's start right there. Because for a long time, developmental theory was, pretty front-loaded. You had Piaget, Vygotsky. It was all about childhood.
It was. The assumption was that you sort of arrived as an adult.
So when did we realize that the journey actually continues? And why does this idea of a structural lens matter so much more than just, say, acquiring more knowledge?
Well, the shift really came when researchers started noticing these qualitative differences in older adults.
Yeah.
They found that two people could be equally intelligent, have all the same facts,
But they'd organize them differently.
fundamentally differently. It's less about what you know and much more about the operating system you're using to integrate all of it, the
Ooh.
knowledge, the emotion, the relationships.
That sounds a little abstract. The text uses Robert Keegan's idea of the subject-object shift to explain it. Can you break that down for us?
Yes, and it's actually really intuitive once you get it. Think of it like this. Development is the move from being earned by something to being able to look at it.
Okay.
When you are subject to an idea or an emotion, you're fused with it. You can't see it because it's the water you're swimming in.
So if I get angry, the anger has me. I am the anger.
Precisely. The anger dictates your behavior because you are completely subject to it. The developmental shift is taking that feeling as object.
So now I'm standing on the riverbank watching the current of anger flow past.
Exactly. Now you can recognize it and say, ah, that is anger, and then you can choose how to respond. That's real inner freedom.
That is powerful. So it's the difference between, say, seeing a politician's tweet and immediately firing off a reply full of rage
Versus pausing.
versus pausing and recognizing, okay, this feeling of outrage is a signal, not a command.
Yes, and it applies to beliefs too.
Yeah.
In earlier forms of meaning making, your beliefs are you. They're just the truth.
Unshakable.
Right. But later, those same beliefs become more like working hypotheses,
Yeah.
things you can reflect on and even revise. This realization that transformation is about changing the lens, not just the content, that's the core insight.
And this structural insight forces us to confront what the book calls the integrative turn. We can't just talk about ideas. We have to talk about the body.
Absolutely. We have to. Neurobiology and all the trauma science now confirms that development is fundamentally embodied. It's relational. If your body is sensing chronic threat, and that could be anything from physical violence to just systemic humiliation, your mind cannot afford the energy for complex thought.
It's too busy surviving.
Exactly. So the non-negotiable prerequisite for maturity, for growth, it's safety.
Okay, that sets us up perfectly for the engine of this entire framework. Dr. Sarli calls it the coherent relational loop. He says it's like a moment-by-moment diagnostic of our health.
That's a great way to put it.
So what are the key elements of this loop, and how does it explain why we just fall apart under stress?
So the loop has four continuous interdependent layers. First, you have physiology, the state of your nervous
The
system.
foundation.
Then emotion, which is the felt signal of what's happening. Third is narrative, the story you tell yourself about it. And finally, relationship, which is how you engage with others.
And when it's all working smoothly.
It's a beautiful cycle. A regulated body lets emotions just be signals, not alarms. That feeds a reflective, curious narrative, which leads to reciprocal relationships. and that feeling of connection then feeds safety right back into the body.
That sounds like peak humaning. But when things break down, the source argues the collapse doesn't start with our bad ideas.
No, and that is the most critical takeaway. Breakdown does not begin in belief. It begins in the body. If your nervous system perceives a threat, could be a sudden deadline, a harsh word from your boss, even a memory trigger, it instantly shifts into survival physiology.
Right, or flight.
Right. Your breathing gets shorter, your awareness narrows, and the whole system just reorganizes for defense. It's a total short circuit.
And how does that physiological alarm clock ripple up through our emotions and narratives?
Everything just collapses inward. Emotion either becomes overwhelming or you go completely numb. Narrative, instead of being reflective, snaps shut into a binary.
I'm right, you're wrong.
I'm right, you're wrong, and you are dangerous. And relationship instantly becomes adversarial. You have to control the situation or you have to slee it.
So if I'm in a tense meeting and my boss gives me some harsh feedback, my system might read that as a threat to my survival. My status and my ability to hear their point just vanishes.
It's gone. Even if you're smart enough to understand the words, your system is no longer learning. It is surviving. And the core insight here is that developmental arrest, you know, being stuck, being chronically reactive, it's physiology under threat.
Wow.
You can't transform anyone or even yourself when the nervous system is locked in defense.
So the repair isn't about having a better argument.
No.
It's about a better relationship. It's about co-regulation.
Exactly. We regulate with each other. The steady presence of a colleague, a gentle tone of voice, making eye contact. These aren't just, you know, nice gestures. They are biological cues.
They're signals.
They're signals that tell the nervous system the threat is over. We're safe now. That connection is what allows the loop to cycle back toward coherence and lets development resume. Our whole societal fragmentation, you could say, is just a massive collective failure of co-regulation.
And this is where it gets really interesting for me, because if the loop is the engine, what he calls the coherence cascade shows how that intimate personal process scales all the way up.
It's a fractal logic.
Yes, the individual body maps right on to civilization.
That's the monumental claim in the book, that the stability of a whole society follows the exact same pattern as emotional regulation in one person. The cascade flows from body to relationship, to culture, to institutions, to civilization, and finally, to the planet.
Okay, let's unpack that middle ground. How is culture being defined here? It's not just art and music.
No, culture is defined as the habits of the relational field. It's a nervous system at scale.
A nervous system at scale. I like that.
So when relationships are generally coherent and safe, the culture expresses curiosity, a tolerance for ambiguity, accountability. But when relationships are driven by threat,
when people feel unsafe, to be honest,
the culture expresses blame, rigid certainty, and exclusion.
And what about institutions? We tend to think of them as these neutral systems of rules.
They are anything but. Institutions are basically frozen relationship patterns. They're codified habits. So if your institutions, government, education, corporations, if they were formed out of hierarchy, fear, and competition, they'll just perpetually reproduce that trauma and suppress development. But if they're formed out of mutual recognition and stewardship, they actually grow people.
So things like institutional collapse or political polarization, they aren't really caused by a lack of good policy ideas?
Not at their root. They're caused by too much stress overwhelming our collective relational capacity, and then our institutions amplify the fear instead of the coherence.
Which leads to the final ecological conclusion.
Yes. Ecological collapse is framed here as a failure of relationship and development. A society that is so dysregulated, it can't feel its own internal stress or social pain.
Will inevitably be extractive and unfeeling toward the earth.
It has to be. So regenerative culture isn't some new agey concept. It just means restoring coherence at every single one of those scales.
Okay, so if development is actually the core infrastructure of a healthy society, then we need a new ethical framework. We need to talk about developmental rights and responsibilities.
We do. And the starting principle for that is, it's profound. Every single human being has the right to environments that do not stunt their development.
It's grounded in our basic needs.
It has to be. It's grounded in non-negotiable physiological and relational needs.
So what are the most essential rights in this framework?
The first is the right to physiological safety and regulation. I mean, that's freedom from violence, but it's also adequate nutrition and rest. If your body is chronically fighting for survival, development just stops.
And the second?
The right to relational dignity, which is the right not to be humiliated or socially erased. Dignity is the condition under which our minds can stay open enough to learn from each other.
And this has to be balanced with what's required of a citizen. What are the key developmental responsibilities?
The two core responsibilities are really about civic maturity. First, there's a responsibility of self-regulation. You know, managing your own emotional reactivity so you don't just spill it out and destabilize the whole group.
And the second is the responsibility of perspective taking.
Yes. Actively treating disagreement not as a personal threat, but as necessary information for the collective to get wiser.
So developmental ethics means we judge our actions and our policies based on whether they protect or expand the conditions for human and ecological flourishing.
Exactly. And it completely redefines how we should design our organizations. The number one principle for any developmentally informed institution is simple. Safety is the ground of complexity.
You can't have one without the other.
You can't. An institution can't sustain mature collaboration if it's running on chronic urgency, on shaming, on extraction. Reflection and relational repair have to be built into the very rhythm of the work.
So, to bring this all home, the core message here is that our ability to deal with global complexity is not limited by our intelligence. It's limited by our developmental maturity.
And that maturity is determined by our physiological and relational health.
The conclusion of the work is so powerful because it shifts the focus away from some abstract top-down policy and toward intimate, tangible action.
It's true. Development spreads the same way that fear and stress do.
How?
Through nervous systems in contact.
So the work is anchored right where you are. In your team, in your family, in your community. It's in the small daily choices.
It's in how you breathe,
mm-hmm.
how you listen when you disagree with someone, and crucially, how you repair a connection after a rupture.
This isn't just self-help. It's literally building the infrastructure for a more coherent world.
We don't wait for the world to get safer to become more coherent. The idea is we become more coherent together, and that is what makes the world safer.
So if you want one takeaway from this whole deep dive, one ultimate metric you can apply right now to any group you belong to, Dr. Sialy offers this one diagnostic question.
It's a powerful one.
Ask yourself this. Is there enough safety here for truth to be spoken?
Because if truth is punished, if vulnerability is met with shame, the source material warns that development doesn't just halt it, actively reverses. And that capacity to hold difficult truth without collapsing, that's the ultimate measure of a regenerative civilization.